Welcome to the Naturally Nourished Podcast that delivers cutting-edge food as medicine solutions for optimal health. Ali Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only. Now welcome, Integrative Dietitians Ali Miller and her co-host Becky Yu.
Welcome to the Naturally Nourished Podcast. You are joining us for episode 392, Body Love, with guest Kelly Levesque. We met Kelly at last year's What Good Shall I Do Regenerative Agriculture Conference out in Fredericksburg at Rome Ranch, and both Ali and Kelly were on a panel, and she was just so right on, relatable. She was very pregnant at the time and now is a mama of a third son who is 9 months old, and we were finally able to make the stars align to get her on the podcast.
Yes, I was just on Kelly's podcast, Be Well by Kelly, and we'll be sure to link that episode in our show notes for a conversation where I was in the hot seat. But we're super excited to have her on the Naturally Nourished podcast today. We get to pick her brain and share her approach to healthy eating, including her Fab Four technique. We discuss priorities for busy mamas. This episode talks a lot about boundaries, which I know Becky and I can benefit from listening to, and we don't really talk about a lot on the podcast. So I think it's an important episode for everyone, just about, you know, learning the importance of using your voice, creating clear expectations, and speaking your truth when it matters, and how often that comes with setting a tone of boundaries, limitations, and or compartmentalizing all of the different hats that we find ourselves wearing. So we even dig into what it's like to be a mompreneur or a full-time working mama that wears all the hats, and how to achieve best work-life balance. So today's an awesome episode. We can't wait for you to tune in and hear from Kelly.
Yes. Before we bring her on, let's just take a second to talk about our sponsor for this episode, Wild Foods.
Yes, Wild Foods is a company that puts quality, sustainability, and health first in all of their products. They have everything from coffee to turmeric to medicinal mushrooms, and every single product is painstakingly sourced from small farms around the globe. They believe, like we do, that the broken food system leads to chronic illness, and that if food is medicine, we have to get familiar with quality sourcing. They've partnered with us to give our listeners an exclusive discount. So if you use the code ALIMILLERRD at checkout, you will get 12% off your order. Some of the things I suggest adding to your cart would be their wild vanilla, which are hand-harvested whole vanilla beans that are dried, ground, and create this really nice aromatic powder without the alcohol extract. So great for adding into smoothies and such. Their wild matcha is fantastic in a ceremonial grade. And their Cocotropics, which is their wild superfood elixir, which blends in wild cacao with reishi, chaga mushroom extract, maca as a powerful adaptogen, and even wild turmeric. So antioxidant-rich, anti-inflammatory, nootropic, helping you as a cognitive enhancer while reducing inflammation and supporting optimal health. You can go on over to wildfoods.co, that's .co, wildfoods.co, and put in the code ALIMILLERRD at checkout for 12% off your order, and to let them know that you learned about them through the Naturally Nourished podcast.
All right, I'll go ahead and read Kelly's bio, and then we'll bring her on the show. Kelly Levesque is a holistic nutritionist, celebrity health coach, and the best-selling author of Body Love and Body Love Every Day. Most importantly, she's a mom of three little boys. Kelly is passionate about the science of human nutrition and always guided by a practical and optimistic approach to wellness. Kelly helps clients to improve their health, achieve their goals, and develop sustainable habits to live a healthy and balanced life. She is a regular contributor for numerous health, wellness, and lifestyle publications, and is the host of the Be Well podcast.
All right, Kelly, welcome to the Naturally Nourished podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so excited that we're able to connect outside of the Regenerative Farming Conference. You were just on my podcast, and it's like good to see your face again here. It's just fun.
Yes, seats are flipped and now I get to pick your brain, which I'm super excited about. We were impressed with everything you had to share when we first met. And then, yes, you were pregnant.
Yes.
And now you have a third boy, 9-month-old, right? A third boy, is that correct?
Yeah, three boys. Oh,
time flies. So now we're on the other side of things and now we get to pick your brain.
Love awesome. It.
So let's share first. We're also very big fans of blood sugar balance as a super important foundation of optimal eating. We call it no naked carbs in our camp, and that's kind of our philosophy and approach. I love your Fab Four. Let's unpack that and share with our listeners a couple different examples.
Oh, definitely. Well, so first and foremost, when I started sitting down with clients and seeing, you know, high glucose scores, high insulin scores, and kind of running through their day, it was pretty clear that they didn't know what the food they were eating and the macronutrients they were eating was breaking down to. And if they didn't have that knowledge, they really couldn't support blood sugar balance. I know there are some amazing hacks like no naked carbs, making sure you have a protein or a fat with a carbohydrate, or you know, walking after a meal, or vinegar, or all these, you know, little hacks, you can call them. But I really wanted to equip my audience, my community, my clients, my patients with the knowledge of what does my food break down to. So the Fab Four is protein, fat, fiber, and leafy greens or vegetables deep in color. And so when I teach them about protein, which is the first pillar, I say that protein breaks down to amino acids. Mm-hmm. And amino acids, yes, they can be stored in your liver and turned into glucose via gluconeogenesis, but they don't readily break down to glucose. And they're not going to, having a piece of chicken, a hard-boiled egg, some fish, some ground beef or bison or venison or whatever you love, it's breaking down to amino acids in your body. It's not going to cause a major surge in blood sugar. It's going to make you feel calm and relaxed. So we think about that first pillar, protein, breaking down to amino acids and not breaking down to a glucose spike in a crash. Mm-hmm. Next piece is fat. And so we talk about how fat, like avocados, fat in an egg yolk, olive oil, how that breaks down to fatty acids, and how fatty acids, again, like protein breaking down to amino acids, is not causing a surge in blood sugar. It has no effect on blood sugar. It actually, like you said, no naked carbs, it can slow down the digestion of your meal and it makes you feel full. So we talk about protein breaking down to amino acids, fat breaking down to fatty acids. And then the fiber piece is all of the fiber-rich, non-starchy vegetables, low glycemic fruits that are loaded with fiber. And I explained to them that these fiber-rich foods, the fiber wraps up the sugar and the starch. So you have to masticate or chew through that to release a very small amount of glucose-producing ingredients like that sugar or that starch. And so if we understand that whole foods, and I would say that the way that like nature or God or whatever your spirituality is, like that you're being given the gifts of sugar and starch to support, you know, your blood sugar balance and your gut microbiome health in a package that doesn't cause a major spike and crash. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. It is a slow release, a slow drip, and it is loaded with all of those extra good things like antioxidants, like polyphenols, like all the things that our bodies need. And so we talk about how reaching for fiber-rich foods, fiber-rich carbohydrates is protecting them from major spikes and crashes in their blood sugar because they have to chew through it, or it is part of the Fab Four in that it gives them what they need without that spike and crash. And the fiber and greens piece sort of play a role together because mm-hmm. let's say you plated up a beautiful salad with leafy greens and tomatoes and cucumbers and watermelon radish, and you're looking for all that color. Like that last piece is asking people to not just grab a protein bar that has like protein and fat and fiber in it, but right. to really like find the color on their plate and in their meal, because it is that color that's adding all of that added goodness in supporting our body to fight against oxidative stress, to live a vibrant life. And so the Fab Four is simply a checklist. It's like, all right, mm-hmm. let's look at the meal. Let's look at the plate. Do I have a source of protein? Okay, there's some, or maybe I'm making salmon tacos. Okay, so I've got some, dry rubbed, like spicy salmon. And then I've got some guacamole for the fat, and that's not avocado. And then I'm adding like a purple cabbage and green cabbage slaw with some carrot. And so there's the Fab Four right there. And then I talk to my clients about, well, what are the other things that you might add to that plate that would cause a blood sugar spike that isn't part of the Fab Four? And I always call it like the party plus one. Cause it's like, you can bring the party plus one, like, but it's not the base of our meal. We use the Fab Four as the base to say, you can build a blood sugar balancing meal with just the Fab Four. But if you needed something extra, let's say maybe you want a cassava flour tortilla, or, you know, you want a little something more, understanding what is the carbohydrate density of that food and picking things that support blood sugar balance based on your own glycemic response to and carbohydrate tolerance. And so the Fab Four can be as simple as a mom looking at a plate and for breakfast and going, okay, scrambled eggs, side of avocado, there's some berries. Great, great start. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, your child might also want a piece of sourdough bread, or you may be doing some type of waffle or something on the side of that, but we're not building a meal with a waffle, berries, syrup, whipped cream, because we understand there's no protein there. There's no healthy fat there. There's no fiber rich foods there. Maybe just a little bit in the berries. Most of that is actually a blood sugar spiking meal. And so most of the education I do with parents and young people is to pull them out of the diet mentality and really educate them in a way so they can look at a plate and say, okay, that's mostly fat. That's mostly protein. That's mostly a non-starchy fruit or veggie that's going to support microbiome health and my blood sugar balance.
I love it. And it's a party plus one, not a party plus three. Cause there, you know, there are some clients that would be like, well, it also has to come with the tortilla, the rice and the beans.
That's
and
right. Like, you choose one.
The tortilla chips. And it's like, when you have those four things on your plate of the Fab Four, you're not going to be hungry enough to eat all of that other stuff too, especially if you eat your protein and your veggies first, right? Mm-hmm.
That is exactly right. And actually, it's really interesting because a study just came out at the end of last year, and it was looking at the order in which people eat their foods. Mm-hmm. And I know it's very popular right now that we eat our carbohydrates last. And I love that, because we do want to regulate all of the hunger hormones, and we want to feel full, and we want a few minutes to digest that food and say, like, okay, am I really hungry? And how much starch or sugar do I really need in this meal? And what it did is it looked at the order, and it actually found that, you know, in previous studies, it would show that, okay, it would elongate a blood sugar curve, but it doesn't erase the carbohydrates. And so when they looked at long-term disease, you know, the development of long-term disease, like type 2 diabetes, pre-diabetes, high insulin, high glucose, high HOMA-IR, all of those numbers were still going up for people who were eating their carbohydrates last, because they didn't understand the compounding effect of not just having like the cassava flour tortilla with the dinner, but then adding the rice and adding the chips and adding the margarita and all those things that actually still, even though we may be elongating a blood sugar curve and it might be digesting slowly, you're still responsible for digesting the tortilla chips, the tortillas, the rice.
The load, right?
The load. And you're gonna elongate that blood sugar curve. But over time, these patients in the study were waking up with their blood sugar going up, their fasting blood sugar going up over time. And there's a disconnect, I think, for a lot of people to understand that just because we're having our carbohydrates last doesn't mean, it's not a free for all. We can't we can't just increase the load over time and prevent disease. Like, we are going to see the manifestation of pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, you know, and potentially other disease states that come with that, which would be an increase in Alzheimer's, an increase in heart disease, an increase in polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis, like all of those, all our chances for all of those diseases go up over time. And so it isn't a free for all. It really is understanding that the Fab Four, or, you know, a protein, fat, and produce-based diet should be the base of all of the meals that we're eating, and that the fun can happen. It's not about perfection. Oh my gosh, please don't live that life. It's not sustainable as a mom. It's not sustainable just to enjoy life. It's important to have flexibility, but we have to also understand like where we are on the spectrum of being able to metabolize carbohydrates. Like, how active are you? How much muscle mass do you have? What do your hormones look like? And so I get into that nitty gritty with clients, but we always have to start at understanding what breaks down blood sugar, because if there's no understanding there, then they sabotage again and again.
Absolutely. And I think the emphasis, of course, that we're both in deep agreement on is the fact that we're focused on whole real foods, because if you're having your carb choice after right now, because of the way that food chemistry works, food science, processed products, that density of one carb choice, if someone thinks of a serving size, isn't the same of a 15 to 20 gram of carb allotment, right? Because one choice could in theory be 150 grams of carbs, 140. And I think that's where we can get tripped up. But generally, whole foods will be more self-limiting because of the volume in the water and, you know, the fact of the fiber, et cetera. So I love that. I love that philosophy. Let's talk also on protein importance, because I know that's something that we both in our camps are really passionate about. And I would love to hear just from you the importance of women, especially maybe postpartum mamas, meeting their protein goals, personal realizations, and maybe your favorite hacks to make it happen, especially when we're busy and eating protein seems like we need to cut up a steak kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be nice right now? Yes. So I would say, for me personally, in postpartum, this is probably the best postpartum I've had. And it's also the most serious I've taken my protein intake. I've always because I've loved blood sugar science so much, prioritized protein. And people who love blood sugar may prioritize carbohydrates, actually. They may be just super hypercritical around the type of carbohydrate, the quantity of carbohydrate. And I love that. But I would actually encourage them to be more proactive about their protein intake, because I kind of touched on it earlier in the podcast, but if we can consume enough protein, not only are we able to heal in the postpartum phase, and if you're breastfeeding, and I know we've all done that, you know, for me, it's 18 to 24 months on average that I'm breastfeeding these boys. And my body is going to literally break down muscle mass and tissue to give them the protein that they need. And so I would say the most important thing is actually protein, because not only do we need to, do I need personally in this postpartum phase to have the protein for my breast milk, I also want protein stores in my liver so that when I have breaks between meals, I have the protein stores to make the glucose I need to keep my blood sugar balanced so that I'm not in a crash. And that's really important for people to understand. If you are using your brain for work, like I'm taking this podcast, I know my body is using a bunch of stores right now to be focused and present here today. And when I have that, I think about the liver like a gas tank. Like, you store amino acids in your liver, and then they're available to you to make glucose when you need them to focus, when you need them between meals so that you're not crashing. And so what's so different between what I used to focus more on, which was, okay, get your Fab Four, but like watch your carbohydrates too. Now I'm like, no, get your Fab Four. What is your current weight? Like, at 130 pounds, I am looking to have 130 grams of protein minimum a day in this phase, sometimes 150 if I'm really pushing myself. And what I feel is completely different. I have so much energy. I haven't had the hair loss, the nail breaking, the dry skin that I had in a drastic way in postpartum after Toshin. After Toshin, I had to have iron IV infusions because my iron was so low. And we know that it takes 6 to 8 months to bring iron levels up if you're even absorbing the iron supplementation that you're taking. And so I know with him, it was 3 or 4 rounds of iron IVs to bring my levels back up so that I could get pregnant and be in a healthy place for Julian, which is my third. And this time around, I am making 2 pounds of ground beef and it is in my fridge. And that sometimes means I'm pulling that ground beef out in a container and having a couple scoops straight from the fridge with my morning smoothie, with a side of eggs. And I mean, as a mama, that's kind of what the morning looks like. My blender's going, I have eggs on the stove, I'm pulling out leftover protein from the night before. It is not a beautifully plated Fab Four meal. It is like, how do I get this in so that I can rock the rest of the day. And breakfast is the most important for me in being able to really show up for myself and my kids.
I love that. I have a 1.5-year-old, so I'm in the same boat. And this, and I also have a 3.5-year-old. And this time around, I did the same thing where I was so intentional about protein. And I'm like, my body composition, I didn't really even have to try to lose the baby weight, you know, this time. I've got more muscle mass. I feel so much better. It's amazing when you just focus on that. And then, of course, I'm bringing that into every session with every mama and every client. I'm like, nope, we gotta up it. And I love that, just having the easy, you know, whatever it is, ground beef, leftover, pulled pork.
I'm laughing because I ate cold spaghetti squash casserole with bolognese and bison at Girl Scout overnight camp. I was like, well, this is just what we're doing.
It's okay.
It was just fine.
Yep. Better than whatever they're serving. And we've got our green smoothies rocking here that are Fab Four approved. So we're in the same boat.
I think that that's it. Like I think if we're in the camp of expecting that we have a whole week of meals planned and they're going to be from scratch at each setting and that it's not going to kind of be a smorgasbord, then you're setting yourself up for failure because you're going to have burnout for that. Like you just have to be okay eating the cold casserole. You can attach, which I always like to do is like attach how I'm feeling, like really think about what this postpartum has felt like for me. And it echoes everything that you're saying. Both of you are saying, it's just the body composition changes were not it, the strength that's there for me to get down in the squat position, pick my boys up off the ground, sit down, stand up, like do my workouts and feel like I'm functioning at a pre-kid, like in a pre-kid way is really surprising to me because it was something I just thought, oh, well, you have babies and you give all your nutrients away and you kind of feel broken and sore and your joints hurt and your muscles hurt and you know, nothing ever goes back. And you know, I was in the grind of like having babies pretty quickly after one another, breastfeeding them into getting pregnant again. I never really had months off. But man, like if you can just show up for yourself, I would say like a week or 10 days of getting that protein intake to 1 gram per pound of body mass and seeing how you feel, it's everything from digestion to hair, skin and nails, to strength, to, you know, your cognitive function.
Totally.
Love it.
Love it. Love it. Let's talk about how this relates to how you feed your children. So we're both mamas. Ellie has a 7.5-year-old. You've got 3 boys, which is insane. And I'm sure like, you know, as they get older too, just the amount of food that they're going to be consuming. How do you kind of, first of all, maybe let's talk introduction of foods and kind of introducing this concept even from, you know, first food introductions, and then how you kind of see this playing out throughout the life cycle in your own family and in your clients.
Yeah. So I actually wrote a whole course called Fab Four Under Four. And, you know, people have some pushback to that. Like, is this a diet for kids? And I'm like, no. It's really important to me that my 3-year-old, my 5-year-old especially can look at a plate and tell me where their protein food is, where their fiber-rich foods are, where their healthy fats are. They know, and I'm empowering them at every step of like feeding, that these foods build muscle. They make you feel calm. They help you with your sports. They're going to support your hormones. Like I use words that are way above their head to inform them and empower them to make those healthy choices. And I am all for independence at a young age. And so when we look at the flavor window is the first 18 months of life, and we can introduce foods less if we introduce foods and they're accepted in that period of time. So if your child is, say, going to try broccoli, and the average number of introductions is 3 to 5 before acceptance in the 18-month window. After the 18-month window, it can be above like dozens, like 2 dozen times before they say like, yes, I like broccoli. So we want to create a massive amount of variety in flavor and texture and color in the beginning as possible. And what I think I don't like to be dogmatic about introducing foods. Baby-led weaning is really fun for kids. They can grab things and try eat it themselves. But I did make purees for Julian as well because I want to introduce the flavors that I feel uncomfortable feeding as a handheld food. And I think that's the disconnect where a lot of parents will go away from traditional weaning into baby-led weaning. And for those listening, that's when a child has a big piece of food and they're the one who's leading the feeding and they're grabbing it off their tray and eating it themselves. There are certain foods where a Brussels sprout is really uncomfortable for Chris to watch our little, toddlers grab off a tray and put in their mouth, especially it's round, it's big. He's like, "What is happening? That's too big." And I may make some spinach with ghee, a little bone broth, and throw a couple of those roasted Brussels sprouts in the blender and blend it up and then serve it on a spoon and hand him the spoon. He's still feeding himself, but it's a loaded spoon and that flavor of a Brussels sprout is on his tongue and I'm not avoiding it because I feel uncomfortable until the 18-month window. But at every stage, I'm looking for them to have independence in eating, independence in supporting us in the kitchen. So I have kitchen towers, and I recommend that to all of my clients. Kitchen towers, kids' knives, a kid's apron if you want, bowls and spoons that they can use. I did a whole blog post on ways that you can feel comfortable getting your kids involved. I think some parents are afraid of knives, and this is where, pulling cilantro off of leaves, off of stems, or breaking the ends of asparagus, or seasoning the veggies and using the shakers onto the roasted veggies. Get them involved in the kitchen. It is amazing to see what they'll try raw right off the tray.
No doubt, no doubt. Yep, we for sure do that with both of our
And
both of
especially
our
in the
sets.
garden, which you've been gardening too, and all of our kids too. It's like once they're involved in the joy and the pride of watching what they planted grow, heck yeah, they're gonna eat it. And they're probably gonna eat it before it comes in the house, Like it's like
Carrots with dirt on them. Noah will,
shaking it on their
well, he'll
pants.
eat them that way, and then he won't eat them when they're like cleaned up and on
Stella
his
doesn't
plate.
like
It's
cooked
really
carrots
funny.
as one, yeah, but she does everything else pretty diverse. But yeah.
I mean, that's it, because it's modeling and exposure, right? So exposure points, I feel like parents think, oh, I'll just make this and I'll put it on their plate and then I'll put the plate on the table for them. But exposure is all of those points. It's the seeds, it's the seedlings, it's pulling them out of the garden, it's eating them in the backyard or, going to the farmer's market, picking things at the grocery store. I always will ask my boys, okay, you pick one green thing that you want for me to make this week. And are we making it raw? Are we making it roasted? Are we putting it in a salad? Like, you want to dip it in something? The more that you can ask them by offering them two good options, the more engagement that you'll get. So it's all of those exposure points. And then the modeling happens at the table. So for the dads listening, the research does show that modeling from the male, if there is a male in the family, like a dad, a traditional family, and there's a dad there, the dad's eating behaviors actually influence the child's eating behaviors more than the mom's. So a lot of moms listening are like,
Interesting.
I'm eating the salad, I'm eating the veggies.
Yeah.
Chris and I have an unspoken deal that was spoken into existence prior, but it's that this is what the research says. And I know for Chris, he doesn't like a toddler dinner, which is a 20-minute fast. Someone needs a wa extra water. Someone wants a different condiment. We're shoveling as fast as we can type of a dinner. He doesn't like that. He loves food so much. He wants it to be a 2-hour, like we are just eating all the things and tasting
Yeah.
and we're all calm. And that's just not our reality right now. And so that's okay. Our compromise is you plate the veggies in the salad. And you sit and model that behavior for your kids. And when they ask you, Dad, why aren't you eating the chicken or the steak or, the bison, that he is really clear with them. And he's like, I'm going to, Dad, just, I have a lot of work to do after you guys go to bed. Like we call it Kenny Bears. If you've had the Richard Scarry books, there's Kenny Bear and he basically like does all the cooking and cleaning. So we call him Kenny Bear. But, he's like, I'll sit down with mom and we'll have a little chit chat about our day after you guys go to bed. And that's when I like to eat my protein, but I'm going to eat it, And so it's like a 50-50 where he'll sit and eat the protein with us, but he needs 100%, he has to model that veggie behavior because it's highly correlated to how a dad eats. And so that would be my advice for the dads out there, like sit down and eat the veggies, make sure that you're getting involved there, and then don't give up. So, so many caregivers, when a child says no to something, you know, less than five times, they just stop. So please don't give up. I know it feels discouraging to cook something, but remember you're eating it. Your husband or wife is eating it. You can have it for leftovers. It's not going to waste. And every time you're modeling, that's not a wasteful opportunity. That is encouraging your child and opening their mind to what the possibilities could be. So my kids are, you know, it's a lot of exposure. It's a lot of modeling and it's a lot of education. And I don't steer clear. Like I'm not afraid of that. And when it comes to like highly processed foods with lots of sugar, I have boundaries. Like I just, they are allowed to have, certain things at birthday parties. We do have some pretty bad dairy allergies. So it does make my life a lot easier because I'll make a batch of cookies that my kids can have with the ingredients that I like, and I'll bring it in a, you know, in a little to-go container for them to the party. And I'll say, you know, this is what we brought for you. If you'd like a dessert, if it's something that they can have, because there are like families in our community we have connected with, that's always really nice. And then occasionally there are times when Sebastian at 5 years old will have something that I don't really want him to have. And then we just talk about the consequences because inevitably they happen. And a good example would be, you know, I grew up in a family. My parents are amazing. They have so much love, but we were like Costco kids, bagel bites, taquitos, Islands, Cheesecake Factory.
Yes. Yep.
And one time we went to the Cheesecake Factory with my parents and, you know, I got Sebastian and I a sparkling water with some lemons and we're sitting there and my mom ordered a strawberry lemonade and it comes with like a sugar rim. And this is just my mom. My mom is like back in the day, never had to worry about her weight. So she wasn't really thinking about food as health. It just wasn't, it was whatever was marketed to her from Frosted Flakes to Frosted Mini Wheats was like, she's like, I'm doing my kids a solid for their digestion, you know? And we spent the entire dinner after I said, okay, Sebastian, you can have one. And it came and he drank it pretty quickly. And we had to get up from the table and make our way to the ladies' room. And he had his first bout of diarrhea at 4 years old for about 30 minutes. And it kept coming. We'd go back to the table and make our way back to the bathroom. And I mean, I smile because I'm kind of grateful for this moment because we can revisit that moment.
Yeah.
And I can say, do you remember how quickly you drank? Because it was the quantity and the speed of the amount of sugar that you had that your body just couldn't metabolize and didn't love. And so we'll be at a birthday party and he'll have the cookie and then I'll say, can I have another one? I want another, you know, because they don't have an off switch for sugar.
Right.
And we need to know as parents that that is just part of their biochemistry. Like they're not going to have an off switch for sugar. We need to be the parent in the room and we need to have boundaries. And I say, you know, bud, remember that one time? It's mommy's job to make sure you don't have too much sugar so that your body doesn't reject it, so that you can metabolize what you've had. Get back out there, get back in the bounce house, go run with the kids on the park. Like we've had our sugar and we need to have protein food again before we can have more sugar. And so my kids know, like that means sitting down to a Fab Four dinner or lunch, and then there is an option for something sweet after.
And so I love it so much. And it feels good to be in like company.
Yeah. Right.
Because the reality is they're also watching the modeling of their peers.
Sure.
Right. So we can model what we model at home. And it is our responsibility to not shame what other parents are doing or tell our child that that's incorrect, but to connect with our child on what is optimal and correct and reaffirm what things feel like the protein element. I mean, we all would agree how our kids perform when they have their protein goals met. they are more grounded, their blood sugar is more stable. So there's no hanger, blood sugar crash and spike, and behavior wise and attention span. I mean, all of it. And the thing is I think that freedom with restriction element is hard for a lot of people to grasp. And that's the part I think communicating to other parents of you're giving them the world as their oyster by providing pillars of foundation that come with education and guidance, you know, not just a free for all. And I think that that's the stickiest thing. Yes. And the husband thing, right? Because both of our husbands, sometimes they know all of it. Mm. Of course, they've heard all the lectures. My husband edits my podcasts, right? Yeah. But it's like, he wants to still be cool, dad. And we just had a talk pre-spring break. We're going to Sedona. And I said, he's looking at me through the window. Yeah. He goes, I had to have a French fry talk with him because, you know, in his mind, he's like, well, Stella does the grass-fed patty. Burger is available everywhere. And I'm like, no. I want her to eat the duck there just because there's an opportunity that does not benefit her to have French fries for 7 days on the road. That is not acceptable and that's not reasonable. Like we have to preemptive because otherwise then it's the good cop, bad cop. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky too, for sure.
Oh, I feel that in my soul because our favorite beach is Salt Creek Beach here and it's down in, if anyone knows, it's like Dana Point area in Southern California in Orange County. And it's like the most beautiful beach. I go there and I'm just like in awe and so grateful. And they just revamped our snack bar. So it prior was like chips and, you know, traditional snack bar, whatever, the hot dog, French fries, chips, like nachos, whatever. Well, now this really nice, hotel called The Ranch took it over and it's like 100% grass fed Wagyu hot dog, like wild tacos with slaw. Like there's some good option. There's beautiful, like homemade Cobb salad with homemade dressing. You're like, okay, wow, level up, right? But what my kids like there is the burger or the hot dog. Grass-fed options, great. They're down to just eat the protein. It comes with fries every time. Like they're not using like tallow to fry their fries. Like it's an industrial seed oil. It is fried and it's become a habit. And I'm like, this can happen to any of us. It can happen to the best of us. And so Chris and I, we have to have a plan, which is we have to know before we get out of the car at Salt Creek, are we going to the snack bar to get food? Or are we going to the snack bar to get food? And it can't be an every time thing. And so you're exactly right. It's like that conversation needs to happen. And you have to know in your gut as the parent, this is happening too often. My children can't have fries multiple times a week because it's my favorite beach. We need to be bringing our own food and save that for a special occasion. And we need to explain to them, if we want to go there, we can't have French fries every time. So, and that's the hard part for parents is that when there is a location that it has a food memory, we've all had it. It's like, client who has a Starbucks habit and they're like, well, I get this one drink there and I get this one pastry there. Sometimes we have to take a break from Starbucks. We have to find a new location. We have to make a new food memory until we've
distanced route to work. Like literally
you have to distance yourself enough to where you can have the strength and conviction to say that actually isn't great for me. I've distanced myself away from this food memory long enough to not have it feel like I have to have it every time I'm there. And we make a new plan. So I can feel that as a mom, like what that feels like to have those boundaries. But I will say, if you are on the same team with your partner and you are strong in your boundaries, they stop fighting. I think what happens is when people, and I've been known to do this with sleep too, it's like, no, we sleep until 6 a.m. when your light turns on and we can't get up at 4:30. So you start to give them an inch and they'll try to take a mile. And then you feel bad and you're not being strong with your boundaries, but then it takes longer. And so we can be strong with our boundaries and say, you have to have protein, fat, fiber, and greens at your meal before you get a sweet. And if you don't feel like eating this food right now, we're going to wait on the sweet. And if we stick to that, they stop fighting and crying and whining and breaking us down. So I would say the biggest lesson I've learned as a parent now that Sebastian's 5 and I have these two other little ones too, is that if I can stay strong in what is important to me and not, even when I want to not give in, they fight me less. And we, yeah. It's not a conversation anymore.
If there are clear expectations and you're consistent, I think that is 100% key.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's big. That's big. And I love the idea too of creating like new food memories, right? Instead of like the beach and the French fry association, like maybe the kids get to help you make a special picnic basket that you bring to the beach or the special whatever. We're big into doing like, you know, the holidays and creating new memories around, okay, we do chocolate dipped strawberries as our sweet at the end of, you know, Valentine's Day, whatever. And my husband shucked 2 dozen oysters this year. My kids tried oysters for the first time and now they want them at every restaurant that we go to.
And they're like, we'll have the seafood tower.
Right.
I mean, it's expensive. It's expensive, but like knowing the nutrient density of oysters, right. I'm like, yeah, anytime they're actually fresh and from a good place,
right.
We can totally get them if the kids want them. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
No doubt.
Love. Yeah, it is. It's about new memories. Like we've been on a real kick of like making your own burritos at home, and like I'll have like Spanish cauliflower rice and peppers and ground beef or slow cooker chicken and those cassava flour large burrito tortillas from Siete. If you steam them, they really, really tortilla-wise, they really stretch like a traditional, like almost flour tortilla. And they'll stay in place. And that's like been a good replacement for us to stay on the sand instead of going up the snack bar. And they're full by the time they walk up and we just walk right by.
Yeah.
Love it. Let's talk about shifting gears a little bit, like redefining maybe past principles. I know you've been in the game as a nutritionist for quite some time now. We just talked about, you know, eating within that first like early amount of time, maybe first hour of rise, importance of protein, anything that you used to believe in or you thought was an important pillar that you've redefined, or anything that you've had like a new strike of aha that maybe was an interesting development. I'm just kind of curious on the evolution of, you know, how you practice today.
Yeah, well, I think as a practicing nutritionist, it's really different from these ideas of biohacking and maybe intermittent fasting, for example. There was obviously like a really big push for people not to have their first meal of the day until 1 or 2 p.m. in the afternoon. I never was that strict with that. You know, I liked the idea of fasting. I looked at the research. I always said, you know, before you get really hungry, like 10 or 11 in the morning, and really focused more on having people finish their last meal of the day earlier. But I would say I've thrown fasting totally out. But there's no way I can hit 150 grams of protein eating in a 5 to 6 hour window. There's just no possibility of that. I would be lethargic with the amount of food that I needed to digest. I have to push that out throughout my day. And so that's something that I'm not using as much. I really lock it down at night with my clients. It is when the sun goes down, we're done eating. And the goal would be that you've eaten enough throughout the day, but by the time that time of day hits and it gets dark, you actually just want to be like cozy with a cup of tea. I actually had your chamomile tea last night. Thank you for that.
Love it.
So delicious. And that's also replacing bad habits. Like I replace before I remove. So if I have a client who eats late night, it's all about pushing that back to before 6 p.m. and then finding like getting excited about, okay, buying a new tea or having a new, like something to sip on if you need it after that period of time to just kind of wind down, turn down the lights. But yeah, I really do have most of my female clients having a very high protein breakfast and I'm pushing back more than I ever have. In the past, I would have clients say, I'm not hungry. And I'd ask them to eat by 11, but now if they're getting up at 6 or 7 in the morning, I really want them eating by like 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a big change both of us have made. We just did a podcast on clarifying fasting and talked more about how it's so individual and it depends on the goals. So maybe if you do have 50 pounds to lose, it could be appropriate. But if you are a woman who is trying to conceive, probably not. Or if you're a postpartum mama, definitely not. And so Looking at it as more situational and also looking back at the research that we, you know, all were excited about, and most of it's actually been done, you know, turns out on men. So,
right. So
I think
different.
We've really changed our perspective and how we practice in that same vein as well.
Mm-hmm. I also think people cannot fuel appropriately for their training and for their age. Like I would think that there's been some fasting for women, like books recently, for women who are menopausal, postmenopausal, and there is a push for that because they don't have as much muscle mass and their hormones are tilting a specific way to right. where they're not as insulin sensitive. And so mm-hmm. fasting is this great option for them. But actually when, you know, I'll give the example, I was working with Halle Berry earlier this year. You know, she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes young and put it into remission and got even her pre-diabetes numbers down to normal healthy levels in her 40s and has done it all through food and naturally. And when I started working with her for this film, she was using fasting, you know, a lunch and a dinner only, training mm-hmm. twice a day to get prepared for this film. And it was very clear to me, which in the past I maybe would have said, okay, I like what you're doing. Maybe we'll add some essential amino acids. But I really pushed back. I was like, no, like you're doing this really strong strength training exercise in the morning. And she's like, but I'm, you know, postmenopausal. Like I really can't like put on weight. I'm like, you need to trust me. And all I did was add 40 grams of protein to her day and some non-starchy vegetables first thing in the morning. And the body composition changes we saw for this film was insane. And I think especially for women, if there are women listening who are postmenopausal and they're feeling this push or tug to fast to keep their body mm-hmm. composition, I would actually challenge that and say that if we can get a breakfast meal at 40 to 50 grams of protein, you would be surprised how your body composition is still able to change, especially if you're training. Like, especially if you're training, it's even more important that that protein intake is happening prior to the workout or within 60 minutes of finishing a workout.
No doubt. I think that's so important for listeners to hear. And also being okay with trying new things. We're always using that analogy of like, you're not going to fall off a cliff if you carb cycle from keto. See how your body responds. Try it on, you know, kind of thing. As long as it's in the constructs of whole real foods, playing with timing, there might be a season maybe when she's off shooting and her cortisol isn't so high that fasting works for her when she's on a beach, you know, or something. But when you're under higher stress, you know, you need to take into account taking off something as an additional stressor that you put on yourself, like fasting or cold plunging or et cetera. And I think that's really important. In the world of stress, I want to talk about being a mompreneur or momtrepreneur or however we want to say it, working mama and business owner and the ever challenges of work-life balance. Just aha moments you've had in that world or realizations and how you do it all.
Yeah. Well, this has definitely been a season of change for me. I would say, having Julian, our third, you're not on, it's not man to man. It feels like pretty overwhelming to have three. He is absolute delight. But what ends up tugging at your mama heartstrings is like not being there for moments, not wanting to miss it. I had, you know, my mom was a full stay at home mom, and I was so grateful for the time she had to drop me off at school and to pick me up and to be involved. And I want to give that to my boys. But what I did realize was that I didn't have a schedule where I had boundaries for myself for work. And because of that, I always constantly felt a tug to go work when I was with my kids. And so I'm like sitting in a corporate office right now. This is my first corporate office ever in 11 years as, you know, a nutritionist for Buell by Kelly. I constantly worked from my home and in my clients' homes or on set or wherever we were working together. And the reality is like someone's always going to need you. And so I needed to separate so I could go all in at work and then feel comfortable going all in at home, like full phone away, full computer away. I've gotten to the point where I actually purchased a second iPhone, and this people are like, what? It has no cell phone plan on it. It has two things. It is my working camera for my kids, and it has fun books that I like to read. So I download the books. It's almost like a Kindle and a camera together personally. And that's because what I was finding was I would take my phone with me when I was with my kids because I wanted to take pictures of them. And I love taking pictures of boys, but the minute I pull my phone out, there'd be a text message from a client, an email from a client, someone on my team needed me. And what was just going to be a sweet picture of my boys at the beach when they were, you know, scooping sand turned into me being roped into email or calls or work. And I hated that. Even silencing all notifications, I felt like I couldn't separate it. And so stress for me happens when I'm distracted, when I am not present in where I am. And there are things that I needed to do physically, create getting a physical work office, getting a different phone that I could take when I went on adventures with my kids. And I know people might say like, oh no, what if something happened? It's like, I'll have my work phone in my bag or in my car, but it doesn't need to be with me 24/7. And that separation needs to happen. And then what I used to love was like 90-minute hot yoga classes, and I don't have time for that anymore. But I did get into six-phase meditation, which is 18 minutes. And it is a great place to start if someone feels distracted when they meditate. It is you sit down and you go through being abundantly grateful. Like you feel this overwhelming gratitude, and you put yourself in a place of feeling grateful and sending love into your world. You go through a forgiveness if there's something you need to like process and move through. And then it's a manifestation and a prayer at the end. And so it allows you to connect with six different phases of moving through gratitude and forgiveness and manifestation to get clear on what it is that you want to do and how you want to show up in this world. Mm-hmm. And so if I, you know, just having the physical separation of work, it's like, you know, church and state in my life, which is like family and work. If I can physically separate that and clear up and buy back my time to have time for my family and then be present when I'm there, I feel 10 times better. And the meditation just keeps me honest in that, like, what's feeling good, what's not feeling good. And it really isn't about clearing your mind or not thinking about anything. It's about purposefully thinking about and manifesting the life you want to create. When I'm meditating, I'm working out more. When I'm meditating, I'm trying new recipes and cooking more for my family. When I'm meditating, I'm creating new products. When I'm meditating, I'm not vacillating on how I feel and being I'm being strong in my boundaries and clear in my convictions. And that is what feels good as a mom, is being able to stand on your two feet and say, nope, it's time for my kids right now. Nope, it's time for work right now. Nope, we're not getting the fries, but I love you. You know,
yeah.
Like that's what you have that. And that doesn't happen for me when I'm frenetic and distracted. And sometimes it takes taking inventory of your life and saying, why is this happening again and again and again? And how can I get it to stop?
I love it. And we're both taking notes because we both still have home offices shifted from a physical office pre-COVID, before it was cool to go, you know, fully virtual. But it's a tug, or it's like you put the kids down and there's one more thing to do. And then you end up 4 hours later in an email hole of like, you know, it's a mess. And then you mess up your sleep. So I love it. I love all of that. It's great.
Oh, yes. Yes. What I will say too is like edit to amplify has been like kind of something I've been doing a lot this year too. Like I really love Dan Sullivan and Ed Hardy's work. If you've ever read the book, 10X is easier than 2X, or know that mentality, which is a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we get in this space of like, oh, I'm going to grow. Like I'm going to grow. So what does that look like? Oh, well, I'll just work harder. I'll just sell more. I'll just work with more clients. But then you look at your calendar and you're like, no, I'm just working two times harder to make two times as much. But if you change it and you flip it and you say, I want to 10X my business, what would 10X my business, or what would 10X my growth? It's not doing the same thing. It's a really easy filter to look and say, No, it's not doing twice as many Instagrams. No, it's not, like, it's thinking completely different. And that's where you get into hyper growth mode with very strategic plans. And I love that as a filter for life, because this is the first time, you know, for the first 6 years of my business, I didn't do any social media deals with brands. Like, it was not something I wanted to do, because it was an ego thing. I was worried that people would think I was just an influencer they're flying on private jets and buying their big houses. but I really was like, no, I love the science and I work with clients and it was really important to me to have that credibility and to write my books. And so I didn't do any of it. And then I started working with the brands like Primal Kitchen that I've loved forever and that I use. And I did that for like another 5 years where I'd work with brands. And I told my sister just the beginning of this year, like, my goal is to sunset every single social media deal that I have by 2025. And she's like, no, like, it's kind of golden handcuffs. But if I think 10X, like, social media deals aren't going to get me 10X. Yeah. I have to look way bigger than that. I have to think very differently. Is that a large conference where I'm on a stage? Is that a best-selling book where I just go deep and really, really work to create like a New York Times bestseller, and I take that time away to do real deep work? That's all going to feel a lot better than doing,
right,
times the social media deals. So why am I even entertaining them at all? And so it just like that edit to amplify.
I love that.
10X mentality has really been awesome. And then buying back my time, like Dan Martell, I've had him on my podcast. And as an entrepreneur, I would say, or as anyone, buy back your time is looking at what your buyback rate would be. Like, if my hourly rate is X, what's my buyback time? And then being able to delegate and have people on your team. So having an assistant that you never go into your email, they filter to a folder that's Kelly Levesque. And you expect that at a certain time every day, your email inbox is empty and you can go into just my folder and say like, okay, what do I have to handle? Because for a lot of entrepreneurs, what I realized is you turn your inbox into your to-do list, but that's not manifesting and creating. That's being responsive and reactive to the world and what they want from you. So
short ping pong strokes versus really poignant, focused, targeted game, really. And that's what we always say. We're like, we're stuck in the tennis match when you're on the email chain. That's all you're doing is, okay, it's been 9 days since I got back to that one. I got to go back. So I think that's huge. That's huge. Love it.
And it's really hard to unlearn that. And so the only way to unlearn that is to get out of it. Like literally delete, and I think that's scary for people to give an assistant or someone access to your email instead of just forwarding something and say, book this for them or that or do this. It's like they take ownership over your email and your calendar, and you have to just say, ooh, okay, now I'm not in that. What am I creating outside of that?
Sure. How much that would liberate you now. Wow.
That feels scary and mind-blowing at the same time. Yeah.
Super scary. But also, like, I just think, like,
very liberating.
How much time in the last decade have I spent in my email? Like, what am I doing? Like, and then it's crazy the way kids make you change your life, because you're like, prior to, if I didn't have kids, I'd just float around in my email and write people back all day long. But the reality is, it's like, I'm trading email time for kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. It creates perspective and urgency in a different sense of like what, and makes you edit it down. It's like, what is actually important? Mm-hmm. Oh, my kids are actually important. So how do I, shift all of this? It changes your whole life.
No doubt.
Really does.
No doubt. Yeah. Love it. Edit to amplify.
Yes.
I'm doing it. It's happening. Pull quote for me. Before we let you go, this has been really great, Kelly. We've appreciated all your insight. Two things. One, I'd love you to talk about your two books a little bit. Yes. I can't believe we didn't get there. So please tell us about Body Love. And then also, before we let you go, I would love to get a 24-hour recall. So what you ate yesterday from when you woke up to when you went to bed. We just love doing that from our guests before we let them go.
I love it. All right. So first and foremost, body love and body love every day. Body love teaches you the Fab Four. So it is the primer on blood sugar balance. It teaches you how to use the Fab Four and gives you a bunch of recipes that tell you what exactly in these recipes is the Fab Four. How am I getting my essential amino acids from protein, my essential fatty acids from fat, and the fiber and leafy greens or vegetables deep in color to just nourish and fuel the body. So Body Love Every Day takes it a step further. It looks into, okay, your lifestyle. So there's Girl on the Go, there's a Domestic Goddess chapter, there's plant-based devotee. I had a lot of clients when I wrote that book who were really leaning into the plant-based life. And I was highlighting iron uptake and bioavailability on a plant-based diet, protein bioavailability, really like shedding light on, okay, if this is how committed you are, you have to take it as seriously as an athlete. Mm-hmm. I know that you're getting the protein and you're, you know, soaking and sprouting your grains and your beans. And that we're really, really leaning into that. And it's interesting because I will say now, as you know, a mom of three with little kids who's been through getting pregnant and postpartum, and people know this who follow along, like, it's not my favorite. Like mm-hmm. when it comes to getting the most vibrant, healthy blood tests and gut and hormone testing, like you have to have a bleeding heart and be so committed to that with me. I'm going to push back on you a lot more than mm-hmm. I did here. So that's another thing that's really shifted, not only like protein intake timing, but connection to a specific lifestyle, be it plant-based, for optimal health and vitality. Like I'm really going to push back against you as a client and shed light on maybe deficiencies or suboptimal levels on mm-hmm. blood tests. Say like, look, my goal is for you to feel your best, but it also means I need to push back against you and have boundaries and, yep. and conviction in getting you to a place where I think you'd actually feel better. So, Body Love Every Day really just kind of goes into like, okay, you're traveling on flights, you're girl on the go. What do you have? Chomp sticks? How can you get yourself some hard boiled eggs? Like, how are you being healthy on the move and ordering out and using the Fab Four to kind of pick the cleanest options on the menu and things like that. So it's the primer and then the details, depending on which book you get. Mm-hmm. And then the last 24 hours. So last night we had some top sirloin steaks that my husband barbecued, and he's getting really good at barbecuing. So that's making my life pretty easy. Yeah. We had asparagus, purple potatoes. And then I had yesterday at noon, I had roasted a whole chicken and done some Brussels sprouts and heirloom carrots, roasted those. And so there was some leftover veggies there, but that's also what I had had for lunch. And that went in the boys, those two meals kind of went in the boys' lunches today. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of leftovers. I might make it a little bit different or a little bit fun by pulling that chicken and putting a side of pesto in the lunchbox or as a dipper or something different like that. But I know it sounds kind of boring for some people, but like I made a whole chicken yesterday. I made my husband make a whole bunch of steak. Yep. So we had that leftover stuff in the fridge. And then for breakfast yesterday, I had a Fab Four smoothie, and I did also some pesto. It's like shishuka, but pesto. So the eggs. And if you like a crispy fried egg, if you just right before it's kind of finishing, put the pesto in the pan, it gets like really kind of, you know, crispy and oily and delicious. You can throw some tomatoes and some spinach in it, and it's chef's kiss.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But yesterday was Sunday. So like, if we were taping this tomorrow, if we were taping this tomorrow, it would be like, I had a Fab Four smoothie. I had two chomp sticks. I had like
olive oil.
Yeah. It might've been not as fresh, definitely leftovers, but it would have done the trick. So we're all good. Yeah.
Awesome.
Love it. Sounds delicious. Has been so awesome. We will link all the things that you have shared with our audience. Just finally, where can they find out more about you and connect with you further?
Yeah. So I'm online at Be Well by Kelly or kellylevesque.com. So courses, protein powders, Fab Four smoothie recipes, which it takes the Fab Four into your blender, because whatever's on your plate or in your blender ends up in your blood. And so really important that your blender is balanced. So that formula helps people use the Fab Four to make sure they're not having basically an all fruit smoothie and a crash.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Love it.
Come find me. Come say hi. I'm around. Yeah.
Good, good. Well, thank you so much for being on Naturally Nourished. We appreciate the time.
That was fun, ladies.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at alliemillerrd.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Becky at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.